last Friday, Emile Mahout's term expired at midnight, and no president was elected to replace him. It's worth remembering why there was no presidential election. You know, at its most fundamental constitutional level, it's simply because members of parliament from the blocs of Hezbollah, Michel Aoun, and Navid Berri did not show up to vote. That's the most essential problem. And over the past couple of weeks, the French took the lead in trying to broker a consensus solution on the presidency. They got the patriarch, albeit reluctantly, to make a list that was supposed to be kept secret, but as all these things are, the list, of course, eventually leaked. Navid Berri, representing the March 8th, the armed forces allied with Syria and Iran, ended up vetoing essentially five of those names. Saad Hariri, representing the March 14th movement that's more linked to the West, said no on two of those. So the French initiative to get a consensus through the patriarch's list failed, and Emile Lahoud left office at midnight last Friday night. You know, I would say that while they should have had a president, March 14th actually got what we're calling a half victory. Emile Lahoud left office on schedule at the end of his extended term. It's unlikely that whoever replaces him will be as beholden to the Syrians and to Hezbollah as he was. You know, the fact that he left is a sign of democracy that's healthy enough to not yet be on life support. There are many countries, we all know, where the presidents don't leave. Also, Emile Lahoud did not appoint a second cabinet. He did not put the military in charge of the civilian government. Violence did not break out. The sky did not fall. Moreover, in rejecting a few, I guess what I would call fence-sitting candidates on the patriarch's list that the French had extracted from the patriarch, the pro-Syrians here showed that Syrians' allies were not really interested in the consensus. It wasn't enough for them to have a half-Syrian president. You know, and this was a clear message, I think, to France and to everyone else. And I hope that people heard this message. Now, the question today is how to get to the other half of the victory. You know, a Maronite president elected as quickly as possible, committed to Lebanon's sovereignty, unity, independence, the strengthening of the state, implementation of Security Council resolutions, all those sort of March 14th core values. You know, and I don't see such urgency that one should settle today for a bad solution when a more reasonable president might be achieved a bit later. Time in general is not on the side of the March 14th forces. Christians here may accept a temporary vacuum, but they will naturally, I guess understandably, become more restless as time goes on and what they would consider to be their office is not filled. And we already see that Michel Aoun is trying to use this vacancy to whip up populist resentment against the cabinet on March 14th. And the longer that this vacuum goes on, the more believable his, I would just say, otherwise unbelievable rhetoric becomes that this was actually U.S. March 14th desire all along to have a vacancy. There's always a danger in Lebanon, unfortunately, of more security incidents, more assassinations. You know, the majority in parliament was 72 out of 128 MPs after elections in 2005, and now it's down to a tottering 68. The economy is declining, which also contributes to popular discontent. So in other words, in my view, the presidency needs to be filled quickly. The question is how. Does one try again for consensus in a country as divided as Lebanon when you know that that means giving Hezbollah a veto over the choice? Or does one try to assemble the right kind of incentives that permit some kind of respect to the democratic majority's right to elect the president? You know, personally, I hope that the experience with the French initiative will allow us to look again at that democratic option. Now, we've heard that this democratic option, which you can call half plus one, absolute majority, whatever you want to call it, we've heard that this will destabilize Lebanon and lead to civil war. But I've heard that a lot, particularly over the last 18 months. If Senor's cabinet didn't resign under the protest of December 1st, almost a year ago, there'll be civil war. If the special tribunal is adopted under Chapter 7 by the Security Council, there will be civil war. If the so-called blocking or toppling minority is not given to Michelle and Hezbollah this past summer, there was going to be civil war. If Lahoud left office without the president, there'd be civil war, and so on. You know, we've heard lots of these claims. So I have to ask myself, if the absolute majority vote for president is really any different than all of these previous threats and intimidation. But let me note in that regard that the March 14th and the government of Lebanon contacts that I see most frequently do believe that this time it's different. They believe that Hezbollah and armed forces will react on the street to the election of any president they've not approved in advance. So they're taking it seriously. I have to look and say, is this another example of threats and intimidations with nothing behind it? But my context here believes that this time it's real. Now, in terms of what's happening now, you probably don't know, Parliament is scheduled to meet again on November 30th. You know, in Lebanon, everything's controversial. Even that's controversial because the Constitution says if there's a vacuum, Parliament should be meeting immediately, while they'll be very basically postpone the sessions for a week. March 14th is spending its time reunifying its ranks. This is a good thing. There are lots of cracks and divisions that appeared under the pressure of the French initiative. As the French were looking for consensus, it became clear that after they looked beyond their top two or three candidates, March 14th didn't have a unified position on a fallback. So March 14th is now working to reunify its ranks this week. Michel Aoun, of course, is spending his time trying to rally popular Christian support. Fouad Senora, the prime minister, is emphasizing to everyone that the cabinet's assumption of presidential powers is sort of a temporary and even unwelcome aberration. Nabih Berri and Hezbollah are hiding behind Michel Aoun, telling people that they would back any candidate acceptable to Aoun, knowing, of course, that there is no candidate acceptable to Aoun except Aoun. In other words, there is a sense of purpose this week among all parties, but it's not one that looks particularly promising in terms of getting to a president by Friday, which should be the goal. You know, at some point, the two sides will begin to discuss options together between them, across the political divide, to talk to each other. It's not really happening this week. And I would hope that with the experience of the French initiative fresh in our minds, that the United States and the international community will help fortify the March 14th side so that the president leans more toward March 14th than toward the March 8th side of the political divide here. When I say that, I don't mean that the president necessarily has to come from the ranks of March 14th. I may like that, but I'm not the one that's going to be electing a president here. We truly aren't playing the name game. But he must be committed to the international resolutions and the principles that are the foundation of what is known as the March 14th movement. I know I'm sounding quite partisan here, and this will be, of course, used to prove certain points about my biases back here. I'll be fulfilling the cliche of the pro-Syrian press that I'm too March 14th, as they say. You know, and certainly working here, I can see the disappointments of how Lebanon looks today compared to the promise of that demonstration on March 14th, 2005. But March 14th still stands for the victory of the state over militias, for the end of assassinations, for the end of the era of assassinations with impunity, for the role of the parliament, for the implementation of Security Council resolutions, for example. So this is what we are trying to back and fortify still in Lebanon today, difficult as it is. Yet I have to remember that it was the March 8th side of the House, Michel Aoun, who refused to open parliament, who blocked the Lebanese creation of the special tribunal, who closed down the center of town for more than a year, and so on. Now, even if there is a quick solution to the presidency, and let's hope there is, but I don't see a quick solution to the overall problems of Lebanon, is a profound lack of trust in the institutions of the state, unfortunately. Profound lack of trust between the Lebanese. And in, you know, time-honored tradition, each group of Lebanese is looking to an outside patron to strengthen their hands against other groups of Lebanese. But beyond that usual posturing of the Lebanese, there's something larger going on, which is a debate about the future of Lebanon as a state and what it stands for. There are two cross-confessional alliances, basically, in competition with each other. One is allied with the West and committed to something approximating a Western-style open society. The other is allied with Syria and Iran. Neither today, no matter what the backing is going to be able to give the other a knockout fight, either militarily or politically. So I think the question before us as U.S. government officials is how to manage this division in ways that gradually tips the balance in favor of the state without allowing that state to become merely a fully owned subsidiary of Hezbollah, Inc.